our monthly check-in with legislative leaders. The calendar for the Maine legislature is right now chock full of public hearings and work sessions for high-profile issues. Under consideration, bills that would replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, mandate paid sick leave for full-time employees, restrict Maine's vaccination exemptions for school children, and prohibit gender discrimination. And that's just a sampling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We discuss these proposals, progress towards a new state budget, and more with legislative leaders today. What do you want to ask Speaker of the House Sarah Gideon of Freeport and Senate Assistant Minority Leader Jeffrey Timberlake of Turner? What issues do you want to see them focus on this session? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The legislature is in full swing as members debate several high-profile matters. Today, we'll check in with two legislative leaders for an update. Sarah Gideon is the Speaker of the House and a Democrat from Freeport. Jeffrey Timberlake is the Assistant Senate Minority Leader and a Republican from Turner. As always, we want to hear from you. What issues are you hoping to see your elected leaders focus on? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Sarah, welcome back to Maine Calling. This is your first legislative leader update, Jeff. Thank you so much for being here today. And I'll start with you since you're this is your first time on Maine Calling for this purpose. How is it going with the budget? This is the big ticket item every session.
Well, it's moving along, Jennifer, at a what I call the snail's pace at this point in time, because we're just finishing up all the public hearings and the report backs. And sometime I expect around next week, they'll start going through the budget and moving what we call moving in the easy stuff. You know, you go down through each line item and everything that both sides agree on gets a check. And we move on until we get down to only the hard stuff's left.
Okay. How much easy stuff this year?
It's yet to be determined.
Okay, Sarah, anything to add on that topic?
I'll just say we're really looking forward to this biennial budget and working together, Democrats, Republicans, and independents in the legislature to work on the budget that the governor has proposed and to make it a budget that all of us can agree on, and really a budget that moves Maine forward and invests in Maine people.
All right. Well, a lot of high-profile issues, and I don't really know if there's a right one to start with, but I will start with the vaccination law. That public hearing went late into the night. This would be a bill that would eliminate non-medical exemptions for school children as far as vaccinations. Where are we with that bill, Sarah?
So as you mentioned, Jennifer, the bill did have a tremendously large public hearing, very well attended, with people, I think, equally on both sides of the issue. And there's a lot of concern right now. As we saw, since 2010, we have the second highest incidence of measles outbreaks in the country. And I think people are very concerned that we make sure that these diseases that have been basically eradicated in the U.S., that we are protecting people and protecting public health. On the other side, there are definitely instances where medical exemptions are needed for individuals, and we want to make sure that we're taking that into account. So I think as the committee continues to work on this bill, what we'll probably see them doing is considering if those medical exemptions need to be changed in some way to make sure that if there are changes to the philosophical and religious exemptions, that we're still accounting for the needs of individuals in terms of a medical exemption.
Do you have a sense of an agreement in your caucus one way or the other?
I think our caucus is working on agreement towards that and consensus around the idea of really expanding that medical exemption definition, making sure that it is everything it should be.
And Senator Timberlake, what about your caucus? Has there been discussion behind closed doors?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about it, and I think our caucus falls down on the side of, you know, it's parental choice and parental rights. You know, I personally vaccinated my children and would have my insisted that my grandchildren be vaccinated. But I think this is America and it's their choice, and freedom of religion is something that's very important to people. So I think our caucus falls to that, let the parents make the choice of what we put in our children, and the government's not necessarily going to get the say of what goes into our children.
Another bill that's getting a lot of headlines, a paid sick leave. And I understand both sides have a proposal or an idea that they support. Senator Timberlake, you're a small business owner. What is your thinking about paid sick leave in Maine, and what might make it through the legislature?
I think that paid sick leave at this point in time is another one of those bills that's really pushing the businesses in the state of Maine. We offered an amendment to what was coming out of the committee, the minority report, which limited it to 15 full-time employees. And part-time employees didn't add to the total. It also ratcheted down the per diem payers. We don't think that people that are working per diem, if you're working for Turner Rescue today and you're going to work for Buckfield Rescue next weekend because you got a free weekend and they want to pay you $30 an hour, they should not have to pay sick leave to a per diem employee. So we think that if you're going to keep businesses flourishing in the state of Maine, then we got to keep government out of their pocketbooks every day in every corner that we make. And
so Republicans not against any paid sick leave measure, but really pinpointing those people are really making sure that those people who would be eligible for it are very narrowly defined.
Yeah, I mean, you don't. You know, I don't think you should be paying paid sick leave to a 15-year-old student that's a student worker. You know, he's in on that. And I don't think that, you know, if they're working part-time 10, 15, 20 hours a week, I just don't think that qualifies for that. And we're not against paid leave because, you know, it's something that people should be entitled to. But we are, we think there should be some standards, because if you don't, you're really going to affect rural Maine. The little mom-and-pop stores up and down rural Maine and the little small businesses in rural Maine, if you get much under 15 employees, these people aren't set up and equipped to handle that. So I think it's very important to protect rural Maine and the small businesses up and down the state of Maine.
So, Speaker Gideon, it sounds to me as though there will be something at the end of the session on paid sick leave.
Yeah, so I know this bill has, the committee's been working on this bill for quite a while now, and I do want to say that I appreciate the ways in which both Republicans and Democrats have worked on this issue and moved on this issue, because I think we saw amended reports come out on both the minority and majority reports. Let's just talk about the heart of the issue here, which is the idea that we want to make sure that workers are healthy and that families are healthy. And that's really what's behind the Paid Sick Days Bill and also the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act as well. We want to, you know, we understand that sicknesses happen for people. They might happen on an individual basis of, you know, a sick day or a sick child at home. They might be something more serious in terms of a long-term sickness of a parent or spouse or an individual themselves or the welcoming or birth of a child. And we believe that when the individual employee is healthier, then that is also better for the business too. So I think that's really what's behind both the Paid Sick Day Bill and the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act. And we want to work on both of these bills in a way that can be beneficial for the worker, but also for the business. So that's what we're still driving towards. And I don't know if there's additional compromise that is out there on the Paid Sick Day Bill to bring Democrats and Republicans together on this still, as it comes to the floor of both the House and the Senate, there might be. And I certainly know that that is the case on the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act that is just going to committee in a couple of weeks.
We're speaking with Speaker of the House, Sarah Gideon, and Assistant Senate Minority Leader, Jeffrey Timberlake, from our Augusta studio. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. If you do send an email, please keep it brief. Speaker Gideon, Governor Janet Mills has said that she is leaning in favor of the the CMP proposal to build a power corridor through Maine to bring energy from Canada to Massachusetts. Many, many people opposed to this. A member of your caucus has introduced a bill that would make it so that every single town along the corridor would have to pass this to make it happen. What is the position of House Democrats on the CMP, the proposed corridor?
Well, House Democrats don't have a position on the corridor. One of the sort of lesser understood and honestly more challenging things about this issue is that the legislature does not have direct control of this issue. The process for approval of the corridor is one that goes through the PUC. As we saw, they just made a decision for approval, and also the DEP permitting process. Now, I will say personally that I have a lot of concerns about the corridor, specifically about the environmental impact, and also questions about what the actual carbon emission reductions are in this. And I would like some answers to that particular question, which is why I really support Senator Brownie Carson's bill, which directs the DEP to actually conduct a study, an independent study, on the reduction of carbon emissions by having this project come through. That being said, there are a couple of bills that try to nibble around the edges in this, but we don't actually have the ability to completely stop this transmission line from happening. We just have the ability to do things, for example, like when there is an eminent domain process requiring the individual town to, you know, give its approval. This is a really challenging thing and a huge project. We saw both New Hampshire and Vermont reject these projects, and I think that those are cautionary tales for us, and we need to understand every environmental impact and whether this is right for Maine.
Senator Timberlake, what are you hearing from your caucus and also from folks who live in your area?
I think Speaker Gideon did a very good job of describing where our caucus is, too. I mean, I won't say that our caucus has a solid position. There's people that are dead set against it and people that are for it. And some people like me who are still doing the investigation. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of reports out that 67% of the people in the state of Maine do not approve of it. You get up in the Franklin County area, you know, it's running up as high as 75% of the people are against it. I'm part of that 20% who haven't totally made up my mind yet, because I need to find out what the final deal is going to be. And we're going to hear more about what's going to happen down the road in the future, because there's going to be some studies done and some report backs that come back to the DEP, because they're now going to get involved in this subject. And I'm interested to see, you know, what the savings really are, and what does Maine get out of this? I think the biggest question we have on this corridor is what does the state of Maine get out of this? And other than some possible local option property taxes that we're going to get, but what can the whole state of Maine get? Are we going to lower electricity rates in the state of Maine with this? Are we going to negotiate a deal with Massachusetts that they're going to expand the natural gas pipeline to us? I mean, what are the options that are out there? And I don't think we're done negotiating yet. And I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to listen to both sides of the story and hopefully come up at the end with a determination of where we fall on this issue.
You know, Sarah, you mentioned that this is really in the hands of the PUC and DEP. Governor Mills doesn't technically have a vote here, but she has come out with a position statement. Is it possible that your caucuses will do the same?
I don't want to speak for my whole caucus, but I personally don't think that our caucus is going to come out and take a stand one way or the other on the issue, because everybody gets to have their beliefs. I mean, I haven't taken a stand one way or the other on it. So I can imagine the members in our caucus are going to weigh out what this, at the end of the day. We don't know what the total deal is yet. We don't know what the DEP is going to come out with for a report. We don't know the final outcome of what the PUC and what the rate payers is. So until you have all that information, I wouldn't dare wager where we was gonna, where was we gonna come down on this issue.
Speaker Gideon.
Yeah, I, to the best ability that I can predict, I don't expect that we will have one caucus position because, as you mentioned, you can see that the governor has one position on this, and you probably noted that there are there's some pretty vocal opposition from members of our caucus to this. I do think we need more information, as I mentioned, but I think people will probably continue to come out with strong feelings, both for and against, probably more people against. But I don't think there will be one particular caucus position or announcement on it.
All right. Before we get to a break, I want to get to an issue that matters to many people in Maine, and that's high prescription drug prices. I know this is something that's a concern of both Republicans and Democrats. Senator Timberlake, what are you all looking at? What would you like to see happen?
Well, you know, just like everybody else, we want to see lower drug prices. You know, Senator Pouliot has got in LD 1389, which is very similar to Senator Sanborn's LD 51, which is a concept draft. And I don't see this as being a partisan issue. This is an issue that both sides are taking a serious look at and trying to figure out how you accomplish what you want to accomplish with the drug companies. You know, when Senator Collins came out that when you go to the pharmacist should tell you that if you're paying more through your insurance company than what you could buy it for, just buying it over the counter, they should tell you. I think all this stuff is important stuff that needs to happen, and we got some work to do to figure out how you actually accomplish this, because this isn't necessarily an easy issue. It was brought up last fall, and Governor Mills at that point in time ruled that one of the pharma bills that we was working on was possibly unconstitutional, so that got tabled and held over. And so, you know, I think both sides are working very hard to find a solution, and I think somehow we'll work up with something that hopefully lowers the cost of medication to all Mainers in the state of Maine. It's something that needs a lot of work.
Speaker Gideon.
Yeah, so we know this has been a problem for a long time, rising prescription drug prices, the inability to understand why that is the case sometimes, even as we watch the drug prices in neighboring countries being much lower. So I think there are a number of initiatives on the table. I definitely agree with my friend the senator here that this is an issue that both Republicans and Democrats are really interested in. But some of the key things that we're going to be looking at are price transparency, making sure we understand if there are generic drugs available, for example, and then additionally, importation of safe drugs that we can identify for lower prices. We think that we should be looking at everything that's on the table to basically make it safe and affordable for consumers to get the drugs they need and to pay for them without making a choice between food or rent or the medicine that they need to be healthy.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible at the University of Maine Student Symposium, showcasing research and creative activity at Bangor's Cross Insurance Center, April 10th. And Littler, dedicated to labor and employment law solutions that strengthen employers today and advance the workplace for tomorrow. Littler.com.
Being trans in small-town Michigan can be hard.
There's been kids that have approached me and be like, hey, you should burn in hell.
For the past year, the town of Allendale has been debating LGBTQ plus issues in sex ed.
Is it going to be taught that it's okay?
I'm Elsa Chang, the struggle for an inclusive school curriculum. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. You've heard the tones before, here on Maine Public Radio, and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine's emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant, and Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, checking in with our legislative leaders. Joining me, Jeffrey Timberlake, the Assistant Senate Minority Leader, Sarah Gideon, the Speaker of the House. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Drake calling from Biddeford. Hi, Drake. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Drake, and I just recently went to the universities fighting against world food hunger at USM, and I was kind of asking about agriculture in general and just wondering if your caucuses specifically had any plans on more focusing on local agriculture and local farms and looking towards trying to create a more healthy food systems in Maine.
You're talking to a farmer, Drake. Jeff Timberlake.
Hi, Drake. Yes, you know, there are a lot of bills in right now to do sustainable farming and also on some hunger bills. I mean, one of them that was just passed was allowing the schools and municipalities to send their food waste now back to pig farmers so they could help raising in the pigs. And there was I don't know how the bill has come out of committee yet, where they was working on it on last Wednesday, about letting milk go out for the food kitchens and so forth, food banks and so forth. So there are a lot of things going on. Sustainable agriculture in the state of Maine, of course, is very important to me. I'm an eighth generation farmer, and it's very important that we all survive, because it takes all of us to make farming work in Maine. But it's tough sledding right now in the state of Maine being a farmer, but we're doing everything we can here to keep it viable. And rural food hunger is always something that's a concern to everybody.
Hi, Drake. Thanks for calling in. So I think I'll just add a couple of things to what the senator said. The first is that one thing we recognize is that farming is one of the few industries where we've seen young families come into Maine wanting to sort of plant their roots, pun intended, and that it is also an industry where Maine used to produce so much of its own food to consume, and that's drastically different. And yet, when we look around the country and around the world at the challenges of climate change and food production, we recognize that we want to be producing more food here. Finally, I'll just point out that Representative Hickman, I know, has a bill in, speaking of the forum that you went to on world hunger, he has a bill in to bring together people who can think about how we focus on eradicating hunger in the state of Maine by the year 2030, which is a bold and aggressive idea, but I think one that we can all agree on.
All right. Well, Drake, thanks for your question. We'll go to John, who's calling from Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, the speaker just mentioned climate change, and I know that a bunch of bills went in. Many of us think that Maine should do its part on the subject, albeit without putting ourselves at a competitive disadvantage, just doing our share. And I'm curious which of those bills in your guests' opinion stand a good chance of being passed. And I'm particularly interested in the building codes. We are behind other states in an energy building code. And if we were to enact a strong one and enforce it, that actually saves Maine money, because you make buildings more snug, more warm, and they cost less to heat. And I'm always disappointed that we're not a leader in that, and I'm wondering if this legislature might change that.
John, thanks for your question. Speaker Gideon.
Hi, John. Thank you for this question. So you are correct. There are quite a number of bills in the hopper this legislative session that deal with climate in a number of different ways, from mitigating climate change to dealing with the climate change that has already happened, whether it be for example, for coastal communities or for the effects on hunting or recreation, and so many other things. I think that one of the things things, one of the main things that we're focusing on is Representative Ralph Tucker's original bill, which was to reduce carbon emissions by the year 2050. And now all of a sudden I'm doubting if we had 2030 in there. So excuse me if I just misspoke. But that actually is also proposed in the governor's bill, which is a bill to reduce carbon emissions drastically and then also to introduce a climate council, which would have people weighing in, whether they're involved in marine resources or the Department of Environmental Protection or any myriad of places that we will feel the effects of climate change and where we can actually affect it in the future. So this is definitely a focus of the governor's. It's absolutely a focus of Maine House and Senate Democrats. And I hope it's something that's going to be a real bipartisan effort this year.
Yes, John, and thank you for the question. I think that the speaker did a really good job of covering a lot of the climate change issues. We'll be waiting for them to be reported back out of committee and see how they come. I think one of the issues you brought up was building codes, and I served as a chairman of a planning board for 16 years and watched the building codes evolve over the years. And I can't agree more with you that the more we can do to make our houses tighter and more efficient is important, but we also got to remember not to do it and force our elderly and other people out of their homes when we do it. So there's a very fine line we're playing with there, but building codes and heating and so forth is something that's going to carry the day into the future because of energy costs. So I look forward to seeing how the climate change and the building code referendums come out here.
John, thanks for your call. We'll move up to Moosehead Lake and Rich. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to thank Sarah Gideon's aides because they've helped me a lot. I'm a whistleblower that worked with Tramway Safety Committee, and I spoke before the oversight committee that reappropriated Commissioner Ann Head to her office. And I'd like to make a comment to Sarah Gideon to let her know the state of Maine's ski lifts, that 40% of all accidents in the United States since 75 have happened here, four of the 10, and 74 people have been injured, 24 here in Maine. So a third of the people in all of the United States lifts have been hurt here. And three of those accidents have actually happened within the last 9 years under Commissioner Head. And in light of the injuries and the two deaths of the children in Opago, for the children that died under the welfare system, and government oversight has now worked to change that.
Sure. Rich, do you have a question? I need you to ask your question.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit nervous. Yes, my question is to Sarah Gideon, is anything's going to be done to look into the oversight, tramway safety oversight?
So, Rich, thank you for being on today, and thank you for your question. I have to confess that I'll have to see if we can get your information and I can get back to you on that, because I'm not aware of the status of any oversight investigations into that right now. I do know that the Government Oversight Committee has a long list of issues that they're investigating currently, and I'm happy to look at that and get back to you.
All right. Well, Rich, thank you for your call. We'll move to Ocean Park and Peter. Hi, Peter. Go ahead. Go ahead, Peter. Peter, are you there? Okay, we're going to move on. We'll go to an email. This is from Dunaha in... by email. I live in Orono. Me and many of my friends have hourly jobs without sick time while we are attending college or right after graduating. All of us have horror stories of working when sick because we are financially insecure. Money is so tight for my demographic. The paid sick time bill sounds like one of the few policy ideas that can directly help young workers like me that want to stay in Maine. We've already discussed that. Do you all have anything to add to what you've said before? Okay, we'll move on. An email from Scott. Why is it then one can't send their child to school with a peanut butter sandwich, but can send their unvaccinated child? So one perspective on the vaccination debate.
Yeah, so thank you, Scott, for that question. I've heard that question posed actually a number of times in the past month or so. And I think actually that gets to the heart of the issue around the vaccination debate, which is that this is not a question of forcing parents to do something against their will, but it is simply making vaccination a requirement to be in public school and to be with other children, and to make sure that the public health is protected in this way. So that is why I fundamentally support the idea of making sure that healthy children who are able to receive vaccinations are vaccinated before going into a public school setting.
And thank you, Scott. And to follow up on what the speaker said is I would add on to that, and that's why, you know, the peanut butter sandwich thing, you know, you have a child or something that's in the classroom that is allergic to peanuts. And at that point in time, you have a choice that you can vaccinate your children at home. And all my children were vaccinated, and my grandchildren are. And if you don't and your kids get sick, well, then probably shame on you. But there is a policy that lets people make choices. I mean, I've heard horror stories of people that had perfectly healthy kids that had them vaccinated and had a very poor outcome. It's not up to me to disclose names, but it's, you know, people have died from this, and I don't think that I have the right to tell you what to inject your children with. So that's how I fall down on it.
We'll go to Dan, who is calling from Bangor. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I actually, while I was on hold, I wanted to change my question. I wanted to ask Senator Timberlake, what was wrong with Nick Isgro's tweets about vaccines and immigration, and why you decided to join the far left in attacking the mayor and vice chair? Thank you.
Do you have anything to say? Dana, you all right?
Yeah. Dan, you know, I don't think I attacked Nick Isgro. Nick Isgro and I shook hands the other day and have talked, and that's all I'm going to say about the subject.
All right, we'll move on to Bob, who's calling from Saco. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon. How are we doing? Can you hear me okay?
We can. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is, with the large state of Maine and the small population, we are burdened with a large tax burden. And I think one of the ways we could possibly ease that tax burden is we have 30 million visitors to the state who enjoy this state as vacation land. Has anybody talked about, are there any programs or anything in there that we can shift some of the tax burden to the people who enjoy the state on vacation and ease some of the tax burden off the people who live here year round? I'll take my answers off air. Thank you.
Thoughts, Senator Timberlake?
Thank you, Bob. And as you know, over the years, we've looked at all sorts of different things with the homestead exemption tax, for example, where that's designed that it helps just the Maine people, and the people from out of state who own camps and so forth in the state of Maine have to pay a little more. There's been entertainment and talk about coming up this year about a summertime gas tax. There's been all sorts of things that we look at, but every time you turn the corner, you're still putting a real burden on some of our most vulnerable people in the state of Maine, the elderly and those living on a really fixed income. So you have to be careful that what you do when you implement these taxes, that you're not just harming them there. Now, one of the things we've done is done some lodging taxes. We've raised some lodging taxes on some things and done some things there where we're paying more there, where it tends to be more tourist-oriented. But your thought is in the right place. It's just how you get there.
Yes. Thanks, Bob, so much for your question. And this is one that, for as long as I've been in the legislature, I know that we have been talking about or in some years really actively working on trying to do some tax reform that specifically looks at exporting taxes to our visitors. I'll just name a couple of challenges. I mean, I think one challenge is that, you know, every time you move something within your tax system, it affects other things. And so you really do need to be able to look at these changes in a comprehensive way in order order to make sure that you understand how it is affecting each demographic. And I think, as Senator Timberlake said, there are a couple of, you know, more easily identifiable ideas that we've entertained, increasing the lodging tax, increasing the meals tax, and whether or not that hits Mainers as well as people coming into the state, seasonal taxes, as he said. You know, we at this point, and we have, of course, raised the sales tax in the past 8 years as well. At this point, I think what the focus that Democrats are going to put on easing the tax burden is looking at easing the property tax burden and trying to figure out how we lower the property tax burden for all people, and then most especially for seniors who are really struggling to stay in their homes as they age. You know, one of the most easily identifiable ways to do that is by making sure that we return revenues to the municipalities so that they can lower property taxes. There is a mechanism to do that called revenue sharing. But I think that one of the things that we additionally want to do is to make sure that if we do that, that the individual property taxpayer is also feeling that relief. Because we know that times are lean for all towns across Maine. So that's what we're going to be focused on this year. We're hoping to work together with our Republican colleagues to really find something that we can agree on in that realm.
We're talking with legislative leaders on Maine Calling. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Crossroads, offering Maine's only gender-responsive residential treatment center for eating disorders and addiction. CrossroadsME.org. Maine Public Television consists of four unique channels these days, our Maine HD channel, and also Create, World, and PBS Kids, all of which are offered free and over the air. PBS Kids offers 24/7 commercial-free educational children's programming you can trust whenever you want. And that's not it, wherever you want as well. We also offer PBS Kids for online streaming on your mobile devices. To find out more, visit mainepublic.org and click on television, or see your Experience member magazine. PBS Kids is a digital channel, and similar to World and Create, can be seen over the air and on most cable channels in our state. Enjoy! Coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have ideas from the CBC. Today, Utopian Dinner Party. 100 years from now, the planet will have 3 billion more people to feed. Global food security expert Evan Fraser talks with ideas to consider two possible solutions to meet this challenge. That's a Utopian Dinner Party on ideas from the CBC at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the latest from Augusta. My guest today, Jeffrey Timberlake, Assistant Senate Minority Leader, and Sarah Gideon, who is Speaker of the House. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. An email from Camille, just wondering when the vehicle inspection legislation will be voted on. A lot of people interested in vehicle inspection legislation. Do either of you know where that stands right now?
I don't know at this time, and I'm an inspection station, but I think I heard that most of them had been voted out of committee and ought not to pass, I believe.
Okay. An email from Aaron. Good afternoon. I'd like to ask the participants today about LD 1421, an act to amend the Maine Bail Code. The statute currently allows the court to set a cash component of bail if it determines that personal recognizance bail would not reasonably ensure that the defendant would refrain from criminal conduct. You guys are both shaking your heads. I won't finish the email. You don't know where that stands right now. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. And then an email from Chris, I think the state of Maine should have a bill that would limit the workload for nurses. I think California has a 5-person limit for every nurse. This is important to me because I am studying nursing now. Are there bills making their way through the legislature that have to do with nursing and workload?
So thank you for that question. Before we move on, I just want to specify that there are about 2,000 bills in the legislature right now for consideration over a six-month period. So sometimes, for those of you who have asked questions about individual bills, and if the senator and I don't know the exact bill by its number, that's why. But we can always find out more information for you if you call our offices individually. So I want to invite you to do that. And then further on LD 1421, this does fall into the category of I am not familiar with not LD 1421, but the idea of a bill to limit the workload of nurses. I'm not sure that there is a bill. As far as I know, there isn't one to do exactly that. I will say that, one of our real concerns in the state of Maine is that there is a shortage in nurses and that is only going to rise precipitously, actually, in the next 6 years, I think. And so we are looking twofold at things. Number one, how do we actually make sure that we are training, educating, and or recruiting enough nurses into the state? And then, of course, how do we also make sure that, you know, there are appropriate workloads or working conditions for nurses or all workers? So that will remain a priority for us. And that's, I think, what I could share with you at this point.
And the only thing I would like to add is I know that last year, Chris, in the budget that we did last year, the 2 years ago now, time flies when you're having fun, that there was some provisions put in for the University of Maine to create a nurses program and to expand it to get more nurses out because the state of Maine is in a nursing crisis and there is a real demand for that. So we have been addressing that over the years.
All right, we're going to go to Nemo, who's calling from Steuben. Hi, Nemo, go ahead.
Hi. First of all, robocalls. I get 4 or 5 calls a day about reducing my interest rate, which I'm unique. I find it annoying. Second, what about education? I've listened to the program, and nobody seems to be aware of the fact that we need money for education. Thank you.
Nemo, thank you so much for that question. I, too, am being plagued by robocalls. I have gotten one here during this program as we speak. Is there any way that the Maine legislature can tackle robocalls? Are you trying to get your head around this? Jeff, you're shaking your head.
I agree with Nemo on this one. If he finds a solution, I think we're willing to listen, but so far, they've created lists and everything else you can sign up for, and everybody finds a way around them in today's market. So I don't know, Nemo. I'm all on board with you, though. If you find a way to get there,
Yeah, so I agree as well, and I know this has been a problem that has very recently been in the national news, and I believe that our federal delegations are paying special attention to and working on. Nemo, I also just want to address your question about education and education funding. I mean, I think, first of all, that question has not come forward to us yet in this show today, and I'm glad that you brought it up because education is the very foundation of our success as communities and as a state. And we absolutely believe that and recognize it, and at the same time recognize that one of our greatest challenges in a state like Maine is making sure that we are funding education from the state level in a way that alleviates the burden on the municipalities, and especially in areas of the state where it is more challenging to recruit good teachers, to make sure that the property taxes are low enough that people can continue to live there, and that excellent education is accessible to kids no matter where they live in the state. So to that end, we have still not reached our 55% of education that is required by law. I know in this year's proposed budget from the governor, we look at increasing the state's share by 1% from over the previous biennium. It is a step in the right direction. It is not enough. And we are going to be continuing to work on what that number looks like as the Appropriations Committee continues to do its work. And Senator Timberlake certainly will be a big part of that.
And Nemo, as far as education goes, the Speaker and I agree. We have been, over the last two budgets, we've been adding to the education funding every time around. And it's being added to again this time. Of course, it all comes down to money. And one of the, because the biggest concerns that I have that's happened within this budget is the teacher's salary, and we all know that our teachers are very, very valuable and very much to us. But the concern that I put out at this point in time, without the state paying for the $40,000 base salary increases, is the amount of local funding that's going to go back on the town at local taxes and what it's going to raise. I know over in Oxford Hills area, they're talking like a $2 million increase to their property taxes based on this formula. So before this whole budget cycle gets done, we're going to have to take a long look at how we do all this and where the funding comes, because the teachers are very important and we need to fund them. At no point do we think any of them are overpaid or underworked. They're all underpaid and overworked. And so we need to come up with a solution to that other than just passing that cost on to the communities, if that's what we're going to do, because that is really going to raise local property taxes. And so I'm concerned over that. And that's one of the issues coming up in the budget that's very concerning to me.
Nemo, thank you for your call. We're going to go out. We think we have Peter back from Ocean Park. Hi, Peter. Are you there now?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Go ahead.
I have a couple comments and questions. The power projects in Hydro-Quebec are gargantuan. The Mainers have no idea of the scope of these gargantuan projects. If you put your thumb in front of your hand, that's Manic 5, and that's Hoover Dam in relationship to Manic 5. The Mainers really deserve the power rates that they pay in Montreal. The power projects in Hydro-Quebec were instituted for the mining industries by U.S. Wall Street investors. My question is, why are Mainers still supporting CMP when they're so exploitive of the ratepayers?
Peter, do you have a specific question about a bill going through the legislature or something that the legislature could be doing at this point?
Well, I think the legislature needs to understand the power dynamic in this northeastern area, including what's occurring in eastern Canada and the needs of Maine.
Okay, thank you.
So, Peter, this is Sarah Gideon, and I'm not sure if you were able to hear the beginning of the program as well, but I think, you know, both Senator Timberlake and I expressed our real and very serious reservations about the NECEC line, as well as the questions that we're asking ourselves about how we get more information, and additionally, what, if any, ways the legislature is able to actually impact or change this project that technically we don't have jurisdiction over right now. You know, in terms of your question about CMP, there are quite a number of bills that we are considering to look at how CMP operates, their billing system, their customer service, their reliability, their safety, their overall reliability of as an electricity provider. So we are going to be working on everything from a bill that suggests taking them over and making them a consumer-owned utility versus an investor-owned utility, to ideas of requiring them to meet certain service quality standards in order to actually earn their rates. But we are laser focused on the issues and problems that exist with them.
And Peter, I would agree with everything the speaker said there to most parts. In that Central Maine Power is an out of state company that's from across the seas, and reeling them in is always very hard, because you got to be careful, because we are a nation that runs under free enterprise. And so we're looking, as she says, at a whole bunch of different options we have and what they bring to the table. But this is, work being done at this point in time. We look forward to see how it ends.
Peter, I thank you for your call. And a couple of notes of clarification from Fred Bever, who is a reporter who has been covering this issue intensively, wants to make it clear that the PUC has made a recommendation, not a final decision, on the New England Clean Energy Connect project, and also that New Hampshire is the only state to have rejected a CMP proposal. Peter, thank you. We're going to go to an email from Jennifer. Can we get an update on the status of the water extraction tax bill introduced to fund the expansion of broadband access in rural Maine?
So I am not able to tell you exactly where that bill is in the process. What I can tell you is two things. One, there are a number of bills that look at water extraction in Maine and making sure that we're protecting the water rights of Maine citizens, first of all, and additionally looking at whether or not that very valuable natural resource should be taxed in some way. So those are two distinct sets of issues. And then on the other side, we are also looking at and very seriously considering how we invest in broadband and making sure we get to the last mile. Because one thing we know for certain in Maine is if we want to talk about how we keep young people here, welcome families or people to live here, grow businesses here, or scale up our businesses here, we absolutely need to continue to have next generation fiber available no matter where people want to live in this state. So it could be through this bill that you're suggesting. It could be through a bonding mechanism, but we are working closely with stakeholders and with the Department of Economic Development to really figure out what the best way to do that is.
And Jennifer, I would add that I don't support in any way the taxing of extraction of water. I don't think it's good business for the state of Maine. And I worry about the consequences of doing that to all the farmers and the other businesses out of the state of Maine that are extracting water, because we've seen bills to do everything. As far as broadband goes, there's got to be at least 10 different bills in dealing with broadband from all different levels, from bonds to funding out of the general fund to everything. And that'll go through the process, and we'll see how that comes out. But that's my feelings on it at this point in time.
Well, thank you both for being here. That's Speaker Sarah Gideon, a Democrat from Freeport, and Senator Jeffrey Timberlake, Republican from Turner, Assistant Senate Minority Leader. Appreciate you being here and taking some time to come to our Augusta studio for Maine Calling. Nikki Shields ran the board today. We had additional help from Dan Works and Mal Leary. Isaac Merson took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, the life and legacy of Barbara Bush, a brand new biography. We have the author on the day that the book is being published. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.